Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by discussing the prospects of a hunting season for sandhill cranes in Wisconsin. A bill authorizing the hunt is being argued by state lawmakers this month, but the issue has been debated among hunters and conservationists for years, and we'll take a look at the pros and cons of it on the show today. With us to begin, Brad Heidel is executive director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, and he'll talk with us for the first half hour and hopefully getting your input as well as we move along. How would you feel about the state creating a hunting season for sandhill cranes? Are you maybe a member of the International Crane Foundation? Let us know your thoughts. You can call us. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Brad Heidel, welcome back. Good to have you with us. Thanks for joining in.
Hey, good afternoon or good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm wondering how you're doing. The status of establishing a sandhill crane hunt in Wisconsin is kind of ongoing. What's the status of it now?
You know, right now the status is that it has passed out of both committees here at the state capitol, and we're hoping to bring this to a vote on the floor here before this session ends.
If it all passes, I would imagine there'd be some sort of tagging system offered to hunters.
Yeah, you know, and that's yet to be determined, depending on the structure that the Department of Natural Resources put together. But there will certainly be this hopefully will pass, and if it does, this will be a strictly controlled hunt through the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And whether they use that as a we'll look at that as a tagging type system, as you know we've seen in the past many, many moons ago when I was growing up with the Canada goose, or maybe it's a call-in type registration like they do with a lot of the different species today. Yet to be determined.
Yeah, I was thinking about the elk hunt, where there are a lot of people apply for permits for elk, and just a few are given out. But it might be something similar. It could be something similar, I presume, with cranes.
Yeah, I would guess it would be. And, you know, and one of the things I just wanted to bring up, I was listening to your opening comment here, and you said something along the lines of, you know, this is being debated by conservationists and hunters. And I'd like to point out that hunters are probably some of the biggest conservationists in the state of Wisconsin, let alone the United States. You start looking at the North American model, which is such a successful model for our wildlife here in the United States, including the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, if it wasn't for hunters / as conservationists, we wouldn't have the wildlife that we have today.
Yeah. Oh, I would certainly agree with you on that. And maybe talk spend a minute or two on the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association itself and what it does.
Yes. So we are a waterfowl organization. You know, we represent roughly the 61,000 waterfowl hunters here in the state of Wisconsin. And our mission is three ways, three different things, actually, three pillars, if you want to call it that. You know, first is going to be wetland restoration. You know, just in 2025 alone, we had a direct impact on over 8,000 acres here in the state of Wisconsin. So putting a lot of habitat on the ground for ducks, geese, cranes, as well as other wildlife. And then we also have our R3 program, which is recruitment, reactivation, and retention of hunters. You know, we want to keep our strong waterfowl heritage alive and moving forward here in the state of Wisconsin by bringing new hunters in and keeping the ones we have and reactivating those that may have slipped away. And then the third part of our mission is obviously going to be the advocacy part of it, where, you know, we're spending a lot of time at the Capitol here And this last half of 2025 and moving into 2026, we're advocating for the waterfowl hunter, and we're advocating in behalf of the Sandhill Crane Hunt, and hoping that moves forward. But we're also advocating in other areas. I'm here at the Capitol today in support of a bill to in reference to wetland delineation, and hoping that we're going to be able to streamline that process for people to get permits from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to create more wetlands. And then certainly not least is Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. That's something that we're also advocating for on behalf of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Hunter here in the state capitol.
So lots going on there. Why are hunters interested in sandhill cranes and hunting? Are they good eating and so forth?
Well, absolutely, they're good eating, but I don't think that's the main goal. And I'm going to go back. I'm just going to tell you a quick story. And maybe you grew up doing the same thing as I did. I grew up in Green Lake, Wisconsin, and I remember our biology teacher. His name was Tom Eddy, and he would gather all the biology students up. And every spring, which they still do today, we would go out and do the sandhill crane hunt, or not hunt, the sandhill crane count. And, you know, you got to spend some wonderful time out in the wetlands counting sandhill cranes. And what a wonderful success story going from where we were in 1984 when I was doing those crane counts to where we are today. You know, we have a population goal set by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of 30,000 cranes here in the state of Wisconsin. Right now, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is telling us we've got over 112,000 cranes here in the state of Wisconsin. What a wonderful success story. But with that success also comes some problems, right? Mm-hmm. Or agriculture, in for the most part, has seen some significant losses due to sandhill cranes. And we would like to help with that problem. I think we can help with the population, control the population with a responsible hunt. But make no mistake about it, it's not all about helping out the farmers, which is one thing that this is going to help with. We also want the opportunity to spend some time in the field and hunt some sandhill cranes.
Jim in Hortonville has a question. Let's go to Jim. Thank you for calling, Jim.
Well, your guest pretty much scratched the surface of the fish and wildlife piece, and I'm sure that they'll play a big role in establishing quotas. The larger concern that I guess I have living in the Hortonville area, north of us is the Navarino Wildlife Area, and there's a lot of cranes that stage there when they're migrating, and it seems like the bulk of those are on private land. And my concern is the guides are going to get in there and get leases buttoned up on those lands, and it's going to become pretty much a pay-to-play proposition for us hunters.
Hmm. Jim, thanks for calling. Brad, do a comment on Jim's thoughts.
You know, Jim, I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate your concern. My thoughts are this, and it's strictly an opinion, is we don't have a whole lot of guys and outfitters here in the state of Wisconsin. Some guys and outfitters probably be taking advantage of the opportunity to hunt some sandhill cranes? I would say yes. But for the most part, I think you're going to see a lot of opportunities to hunt sandhill cranes on private lands, especially working with some of those farmers who are having those deprivation issues.
I'm thinking about the Horicon area for geese, where many farmers there, you're allowed to hunt on their property, and maybe they have a small charge, but not too much, but it's just the farmers themselves. Jim, Jim, thank you very much for calling. You know, there was a study, I think it was conducted by the UW Survey Center. About 17% of state residents would support a sandhill crane hunt. And then I think 48% opposed the ideas. I'm wondering where you see support for the hunt.
Sure, absolutely. And you know what, Larry? Anyone can pull together a survey to get the response that they want. And the survey that was put together by that UW system was actually charged or put together with the International Crane Foundation. So, of course, you're going to be able to ask the questions that you want to ask. And you also will have to base those questions around context and what was the context. So I would take a good hard look at that survey and see how the questions were asked. Because I could pull together a survey of our members, and I have done that, and I can tell you that over 94% of our members are in support of a sandhill crane. But, so it all depends on who's asking the questions, what those questions are, etc. Anybody can get a survey to come out the way they wanted it to.
The population is about 110,000 or so. We've talked a lot on this show about high pathogenic avian influenza. What's the concern that bird flu might be endangering the population of sandhill cranes and maybe lower their populations to unhuntable numbers?
Sure. We haven't seen that here in the United States. And I can also tell you that the system that would be in place is a system that is a pilot system. You know, it's a 3-year pilot. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the ability to end a hunt at any point in time based on population risks. And so this will be a very, very closely monitored hunt, not only by the state agencies, but by the federal agencies. And if something like that were to happen, they would shut it down. Hmm. And guess what? Everyone would be okay with that.
Brad Heidel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, he's given us his view on the proposal for a sandhill crane hunt in the state. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at sandhill cranes today, Brad Heidel, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. His organization is in favor of a sandhill crane hunt. Jonah in Greenville has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jonah.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So I'm just looking for a little more context for why sandhill cranes were so endangered in the first place in the 80s or prior. I don't know the exact timeline. I'm just going based off of what we were talking about today. Was it previous hunts that went too large and unchecked? Was it an ecological issue, like some sort of disease? I just want to know more context so that myself and other listeners can either like or dislike the idea of another crane hunt more. I just think more context, please.
Okay. Brad?
Yep, I would say that's a fair question. And one thing I am is always open and honest, and I don't have a good answer for you, and I apologize for that, but I don't. I can tell you that it wasn't over hunting because there has not been a sandhill crane hunt in the state of Wisconsin for a very, very long time, if at all. But that being said, what I can tell you is if you look at waterfowl, which we would call sandhill cranes as part of that community, whether it's ducks, geese, cranes, et cetera, you know, those populations that have regulated hunting systems are actually growing, whereas the other populations of birds, which you're going to be looking at songbirds, we'll call them backyard birds for lack of a better term, those are drastically declining by a number of 3 billion right now. So those unmanaged species are losing traction, while the managed species are gaining traction.
Hmm, interesting. And coming up in a bit, Brian Michalesko might have some more context on that part, too, about why sandhill cranes were endangered back in the 80s. We can ask him when he'll be on with us in a little bit, and we can talk with him about that as well, Jonah. So stay listening for that context. I think there was about, 200 farmers reported just under $2 million in crop damage, or they do report each year. They're unable to receive payments for crop damage unless the DNR authorizes a hunt. The current bill, I don't think, includes farm-specific provisions which would have been paid for by hunter fees. If there's a hunt, can the DNR afford the abatement bill?
You know, that is a fair question. The answer is yes. In the long run, they can. The abatement bill will continue to grow with the number of hunters and with the increased license sales. So that is a base fund that is set up, and that's for all deprivation, whether it's for geese, cranes, elk, deer, et cetera, turkeys. And this will actually open up that opportunity to farmers where they don't have that opportunity right now. Right now, one of the opportunities and what's being used by a lot of farmers is a deprivation hunt, where they are already killing 1,400 cranes a year based on deprivation hunts on their fields. And those birds have to be left in the field to rot, or they can burn them, or they can bury them. They cannot be used in any other way. And that's just a tragedy. The tragedy that you're not able to use these birds at all. And we want the opportunity to be able to hunt them and to help feed our families and have some delicious meals and some wonderful sporting events.
Robert in Amherst Junction, we'll give you a chance to join in. Robert, hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm curious if your guest knows of anybody who's ever tasted sandhill crane meat. Or is it a trophy hunt and they're going to, you know, stick sandhill crane heads up on the wall plaque or something?
I think that's an excellent question. And I can tell you this, that they do hunt sandhill cranes in 17 other states and several provinces in Canada. And I personally have hunted sandhill cranes and eaten sandhill crane, and it's absolutely delicious. It's absolutely delicious. There's so many different ways that you can cook sandhill crane. They're a wonderful bird. And I do not see a lot of people using this as a trophy hunt. I see it more as a opportunity to eat a sandhill crane. They're that good.
My understanding is the consistency of them, it doesn't taste like chicken. Let's put it that way, or have the consistency of chicken.
It doesn't. And for lack of either way, I'll tell you this, people call it the ribeye of the sky.
Yeah.
It's that good.
More of a consistency of what you might consider a steak than...
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring up one issue that somebody else has raised, and that is a worry that hunters might mistake sandhills for whooping cranes, which are, of course,
yep,
endangered. Has that come up in your conversation at all, Brad?
It has come up. And, you know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service defines Wisconsin whooping crane flock really as an experimental and non-essential. It's intended to, you know, prelude this experiment from preventing a sandhill hunt from really being considered. And I'm going to tell you another quick story, Larry. My wife and I were out looking for some turkeys this spring, and I got really excited. And my wife's like, what, a big tom turkey, big tom turkey? I'm like, no, it's a whooping crane. It's the first whooping crane that I have seen in the wild in my life. And I was really excited about it. And we have our Waterfowl Hunters Expo every year up in the Oshkosh area. We have over 10,000 people attend that event. And the International Crane Foundation has been part of that event since its inception. And what I can tell you is I took that picture and I showed it to the folks from International Crane Foundation, and they were just as excited about it as I was. They could have told me exactly what bird that was, when it was released, et cetera. And come to find out, it was a juvenile bird that was just recently released last fall. If I could show a picture to you on the radio, I would. But there's no mistaking a whooping crane from a sandhill crane. One is white and one is brown. Can't miss it.
Yeah, I think there is quite a difference in the look. Deb in Trempealeau County emailed a note contrary to the comment you made, who said the hunt will definitely help farmers. They farm 800 acres of corn and soybeans, to which sandhill cranes frequently visit. They get little to no damage, appreciate seeing and hearing them, and they're welcome at the farm anytime. She's not in favor of the hunt.
Mm-hmm. Understood, and not everyone is. But I can also tell you there's a lot of farmers that are. You can talk to the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association, and they'll be the first to step up and say, we need this to hunt to help our farms out.
Hmm. And Ralph in Hayward emailed us and says maybe you meant to say that the abatement fund could grow if license sales increased. He suggested that license sales are increasing, or you suggested that, but that's contrary to everything you hear about hunting licenses and interest in hunting in general across the state, which has been on the wane for quite a few years.
Sure. No, understood. And but in this case, the Sandhill Crane licenses would be a new source of income for the DNR and a new source of income for that abatement fund as well.
Yeah, that makes
it would be another fee that would be adding to that fund.
Mm-hmm. Going forward, how will your organization support the creation of a sandhill crane hunt season?
You know, we want this to be a science-based decision, not an emotional decision, a social decision, if you will. And we would work hand-in-hand with not only the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to make sure that this is a responsible sandhill crane hunt, but also work with our federal agencies to ensure that as well. I can tell you, hunters and fishermen, hunters in this case, care just as much about the sandhill crane population as everyone else in the state of Wisconsin. These are birds we all love, we all cherish, just like the white-tailed deer, just like the wild turkey, just like the Canada goose or the mallard. Love them, but we also love the opportunity to get out in the field and pursue.
Brad, a pleasure talking with you today. Appreciate it very much, and we'll probably be talking with you again down the road. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Larry.
Brad Heidel is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Great to talk with him. Coming up, we're going to hear a differing view about the hunt. And Ryan, Michael Esko up next from the International Crane Foundation, our guest. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a different view, a contrasting view from our first guest today, as we visit with Ryan Michalesko. Ryan is the Communication and Advocacy Specialist at the International Crane Foundation. And we're going to talk with Michael, with Ryan, about the Crane Foundation's view on this, and certainly want to get your thoughts as well as we move along. Should the state open a hunting season for sandhill cranes or not? It's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. Ryan Michalesko, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Great to be here.
We were talking about the history of the hunt. I guess there's never been a hunt before, a traditional hunt for cranes, but there have been proposals before, have there not?
Yeah, you know, this is the third or fourth time in about a decade that this proposal has been brought forward, and the prior times it's always failed. We're hoping the same thing will happen this time because it is definitely a big concern for us.
And the foundation's position on this?
Yeah, you know, since this all started almost a decade ago or more than a decade ago, this has always supposedly been about helping the farmers. And in reality, we think it's really been about having a hunt, but we're trying to find solutions that'll help the farmers and really work with them to resolve this issue of crop damage by cranes. It's an important one for us. It's one that we have worked on for nearly 30 years in our study area around Briggsville and Baraboo, where we're headquartered. And it's one that we continue to work on and invest in.
Yeah. I visited the foundation many times over the years. I love the new setup, which is now a couple of years old, but fantastic to see. And maybe spend a minute or two on what the International Crane Foundation does.
Yeah, you know, the International Crane Foundation is really the world's leading experts on cranes and crane science. But more than that, we're really a Wisconsin story. We were founded and established right here in Baraboo, Wisconsin, over 50 years ago. And we've been here since, working in Wisconsin's communities, but really taking the work that we do here in Wisconsin and reaching around the world with it. So now we have a footprint in more than 50 countries and 150 staff working on these same issues that we have in Wisconsin all around the globe.
It's an amazing story, I think. And funded by... How's it funded?
Yeah, a little bit of everybody. We have a really strong group of, we call them craniacs, but our members all around the world, but also, of course, incredible funding from government programs and private donors and foundations and really, really everywhere you could think of.
We talked in the first half hour about the management plan from the Midwest, Mississippi and Atlantic Flyway Councils. Can call for a potential hunt once the numbers reach, 30 to 60,000, I think was the number. And our population's at 110,000. So by this measure, the current population could support a hunt.
You know, that's what we hear often. And sandhill cranes, there is no doubt that they're a conservation success story. You know, less than 100 years ago, famous conservationist Aldo Leopold wrote in his piece, Marshland Elegy, that he thought we would hear the last sandhill cranes. He would, right there around Baraboo at his shack on the Wisconsin River. And since then, we're blessed that population has come back. But, of course, with that are the struggles that come along, like crop damage. The management plan that's set forth by the Flyway Council, that was established to really figure out how to bring that population back, how to continue supporting it. And unfortunately, that number that's set forward in the management plan has been taken out of context by a lot of those folks who support a hunt. They say that's the minimum number needed to have a hunt. And in reality, that's the minimum number for intervention. Should the population get that low, we need to step in and do something. We need to start thinking creatively to save these birds.
Mark in Wheeler has a comment. Let's go there. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for letting me on, Larry. The last guest said that there were $2 million in crop damages from cranes. The Wisconsin corn crop is valued somewhere to $6 to $8 billion. My quick calculation is that for every $10,000 worth of corn that a farmer sells, cranes are costing him $3. Is that too much to ask farmers to, too much of a burden for them to bear?
You know, I think we have to think about the big picture here, which is that there are a lot of farmers in the state who are running smaller farms, who are running family farms, and they certainly are going to be hit much harder than those larger corporate farms. But to really get into the finances of it all, I think the actual estimate is about $1.2 million in reported damages, not two. And when we get into that damage abatement program, which is really where that number comes from, there's not an actual census of how much crop damage is occurring, unfortunately. We know it's probably more than that, but that number comes from the damage abatement program, which currently pays out money for farmers and landowners to provide depredation efforts to prevent damages from deer, bear, turkey, things like that. And that piece of legislation, that statute says that sandhill cranes can be opened up to that damage abatement program should a hunt be authorized. And unfortunately, as we're hearing about this, you know, there was a whole process to write a bill that would create a hunt and include a lot of really great programs for farmers in that bill. That bill has been stripped back to where this is pretty much only a hunt. It would still open up that damage abatement program, but during both the Assembly and Senate committee testimonies, we heard from the state migratory game bird biologists that fund would be completely overrun by Sandhill Crane reports. So not only are we not putting enough money into that fund to actually help farmers through this bill, we are draining it for the farmers that already rely on it for other species.
Mark, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to go back to the history part of it because we did have a caller earlier wondering why the numbers had gotten so low to begin with. What was the cause?
Yeah, you know, if we think back 100 years ago, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act was passed in 1918. That was certainly a really important part of this, but unregulated hunting, habitat loss, destruction of wetlands were all very crucial parts of the sandhill crane and whooping crane story. Fortunately, sandhill cranes have been able to rebound, but whooping cranes haven't done so successfully due to a number of theories, but their numbers got so low that they just don't have the genetic material to rebound. So we have a lot of concerns about both species still.
Brian in Janesville has something. Let's go there. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Ryan. I have been a hunter for 50 years and a crane hunter for 35 years. I've also been a member of the Crane Foundation for about three decades. And it was very interesting when this first came up, they tried so hard to stay neutral on it. And it's evolved now that I really feel like no matter what hunters or biologists say, that the Crane Foundation is opposed to it. And, you know, the population can certainly withstand it. We're hunting this crane population in three states in the flyway now. The proposal, as I understand it, is for 1,000 or 1,200 cranes harvested, which is less than the number farmers are shooting on crop depredation permits in the spring that they don't even get to use. So I feel like There's room to try this, and I just can't believe if you reduce the population by, say, 10%, you don't drop the population and the crop damage by 10%. The juvenile cranes are the ones that are causing the corn damage in the spring, and that's probably the population you're going to hunt because they're not quite as smart as the paired-up older birds.
Yeah, there's a few things to break out of that, Brian. First off, thanks for being an ICF member. We appreciate your support, of course, and definitely want to hear you out on this issue. As this has been brought up in the past, the number of permits that could be given out, and this would really, again, come down to the Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR, but it's probably closer to the 5,000 mark. It's really hard to say without all of the data. But unfortunately, in terms of the science, you know, ICF is really the leading experts on this issue. Of course, three other states in the flyway are hunting sandhill cranes. And I'll just point out that there are 17 states, as Brad mentioned earlier, that hunt sandhill cranes. Those three are the only three in this population. But with all of this, we have a lot of other concerns that we don't hear these groups talk about often. We have a lot of concerns about the fact that Wisconsin's a breeding area. The three other states that have a hunting season are not breeding areas. When you have long-lived birds like cranes that take a long time to breed, and very, very different from ducks or geese or waterfowl, which cranes are not, they don't lay 8, 10, 15 eggs a clutch each year. Cranes only lay 1 or 2 eggs. When you have birds that live to be maybe 30 years old, reducing the population and taking out some of those breeding birds could have effects on the population that we're not able to understand simply because there's not the data. And that's a big part of what we're trying to get across, is that we don't have the information to make a good judgment on this, and neither do the groups that are calling for a hunt. The Fish and Wildlife Management Plan is over a decade, 2 cycles out of date. It hasn't been updated or looked at. And the state has no data because there's no hunting season. And unfortunately, the really sad part of this is the bill that has been put forward through the Assembly and Committee strips out all of the money for the DNR to do any reasonable science on the issue.
Yeah. Brian, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment, want to join in, give a call. The number 800-642-1234. Or email us to talk@wpr.org. Kay in Stoughton emailed us, when is the proposed time frame for the hunt, and will the timing impact the success of juveniles as they stay with their parents for the first season as they return to their winter migration destination?
Yeah, well, this is one of the really important things about a hunting season in terms of resolving crop damage, is that, of course, crop damage occurs in the spring. A hunt would occur in the fall. We believe, and we've heard this from also the DNR, who testified on the record to the legislature, that a fall hunting season is very unlikely to impact crop damage. We've also heard from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to point back to one component of Brian's question earlier, is that the goal of a hunt is not to reduce a population. In fact, that would be a very bad thing if we're reducing the population through a hunting season. So it's kind of one of those issues where you can't have it both ways. We can't say we're going to reduce crop damage, but we're also going to reduce the population and have a safe hunt. In terms of chick productivity, I just want to throw out some recent research from just this past year. And again, we've been studying and banding sandhill cranes here in Wisconsin for more than 30 years. In our study area, where we go out and we look for these banded birds to return, we found that the number of marked breeding pairs in our study area decreased by 32%, and only 1 in 5 of those breeding territories produced a chick. So that's lower than past years. We're still trying to figure out why, but one of our concerns is this could be due to the highly pathogenic avian influenza that we've been discussing. Last spring, HPAI took out probably, again, hard to get a firm number, but probably around 4,000 or 5,000 birds in Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky. When you have a population that's only 100,000, we're talking full percentage points here, and that's a big deal.
Here's another part of that. How will a general open hunt help farmers that have crane damage, since they're already allowed to get a permit to shoot cranes? Just because someone kills a crane, we will never know that it is one that caused the damage.
Well, of course, you'll never know, which, unless you're out there watching them, but occur. Of course, a hunting season would occur in the fall, so you're not going to be watching as you're hunting either. And you know, we hear this a lot from groups like Brad's, is that, you know, the depredation permits are terrible, and they are a challenge because, you know, those birds can't be used. But unfortunately, those permits aren't going to go away. When a hunting season occurs in the fall, but crop damage occurs in the spring, farmers are still going to be applying for those depredation permits. And I'll also point out that the legislature, through the Legislative Study Committee that met on this issue now almost 2 years ago, sent a letter to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service requesting that those depredated birds could be consumed or used by the farmers. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service responded and said, absolutely not, because that would create a de facto hunting season, which is against the law. It's against the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And it's just a bad precedent all around.
Yeah. There has been an argument that hunters have helped animal populations. They hunt, and I think that's true in many cases. The example This person uses the wild turkey because they're required to purchase a turkey stamp. Hunters contribute, I guess, $700,000 or $750,000 or so to the projects in the state. So the question is, why not encourage the same kind of support for hunting for cranes?
You know, this is a really good question, and one that I'd love to get an answer to. Of course, hunters are a valuable part of the conservation mission, and certainly work towards these efforts to conserve the lands and waters that we all rely on. But in this specific case, the math just doesn't add up on a few levels. And I just want to point out something really important here, which is that Brad said that the amount of funds coming in from hunters applying for sandhill crane permits would be able to supplement that damage abatement compensation program. Unfortunately, that's not the case. According to the DNR fiscal estimate, the sandhill crane hunt would operate with losses estimated at about $400,000 a year. However, the bill has been amended to remove most of the farmer support, to remove all of the education components that the DNR could have set up, to remove money for research and management. Now that bill costs taxpayers $1.6 million in losses a year and doesn't help the farmer. So, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense in that regard. And on the other part of this is that hunters do contribute a lot to this mission, but so do non-hunters. And there's a lot of non-hunters in this state. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, I don't know if everyone's heard of this, but they conduct a really important survey about recreational activity in the United States, and this goes in conjunction with the U.S. Census. And in 2022, that survey showed there's an estimated 148 million people who identify as wildlife watchers, 96.3 million people identify as bird watchers, and only 14.4 million people identify as hunters. Certainly not to knock down the hunters by any means. Hunters are great. Hunters are important, but you know they're not the only people that are constituents and worried about these birds.
Bernadette in Baraboo, we'll go to you now. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Yep. So I've heard that. I just wanted to save and bring this up, but I heard and I remember listening to programs that they talked about coating the seeds and having programs with the farmers where they can coat the seeds so the cranes don't want to eat them.
Avapel, I think, is the...
That's right, Larry. You know, Avapel is a non-toxic seed deterrent. This is a product that ICF, the International Crane Foundation, has absolutely zero stake in the product itself or the company. However, we did help with the field testing back in the 90s when this product first came out. And the research shows and the conversations that we have with many farmers show that this product is overwhelmingly helpful in terms of deterring cranes. But I just want to push this back because the unfortunate thing is for more than a decade, these two issues have been tied together. In reality, a sandhill crane hunting season and crop damage are two completely separate issues. But unfortunately, and if I were a farmer too, I would take the free option if I was being told there was one that's going to work, even though now we have ample evidence that says a hunting season's not going to help farmers with this issue. So Avapel's a great product. We still work to try to get that in the hands of farmers, but that's another thing that we're working on. We're trying to work with the legislature to split these issues apart to establish a program that would help farmers get funding for Avapel and really make that product more accessible for the folks who need it most.
Yeah, I assume there's probably an expense associated with using it, which is the...
As with everything.
Yeah, which is the roadblock for, seemingly the roadblock for many.
Seemingly the roadblock, but again, if you're being told that a hunting season's going to solve all your problems, why not try that first, even though we have all of these concerns and say it's not going to?
Yeah. Georgia in Cambridge, thank you for calling.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that the first speaker asserted that there was no knowledge of any problem with avian influenza affecting crane population. And my understanding is that there was just this last spring, there were 30,000 cranes died of it in Indiana last spring.
Hmm.
The number is not quite as high as 30,000, but there is certainly a large die-off of sandhill cranes in Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky, probably about 4 or 5% of the population. And we had birds infected here in Wisconsin. Unfortunately, this past fall, we also lost the first known whooping crane to die of highly pathogenic avian influenza, which was certainly a devastation for us as well. And since then, two more whooping cranes in Canada in the Aransaswood buffalo population, which migrates between northern Canada and Texas, have died from avian influenza. So it is certainly a concern, but the big thing is that in Europe, there is a species of crane called the Eurasian crane, or the common crane, sometimes it's referred to. This is the second most abundant species of crane next to sandhill cranes, and probably those most similar to sandhill cranes and how they rely on agricultural areas next to wetlands. They consistently have large, unprecedented outbreaks of avian influenza in Europe that have caused the loss of up to 80, 100,000 individuals. When our population is only an estimated 112 individuals, that would, you know, completely wipe out the population. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's something we need to be concerned about, and we can't not acknowledge these issues at hand.
Georgia, thank you for calling in. Jake in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Yeah, thanks for the show, and I appreciate the balanced, two-sided ideas from NPR. It's great to hear. I have two quick questions. Was the hunting side proposing any sort of limits on guns or ammunition that you can use for the hunt? And then was there also an animal that has gone away that used to control the population?
Predator population, yeah.
You know, I think that in terms of the restrictions that would be built into a bill like this, this bill's unfortunately been really stripped down. So the International Crane Foundation, as well as to Brad's credit, the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, a number of other organizations participated in what's called a legislative study committee, which was held at the Capitol. It was a six-month long program that we met monthly to meet and discuss this issue. And that bill, or that committee, put forward a bill that, like I said, had all of these really important programs and rules, and most importantly, the extra funding for farmers and education, outreach, and management of the population. Unfortunately, that seems to be a bit of a Trojan horse. As soon as that bill made it to the Sporting Heritage Committees in both the Assembly and the Senate, it was rather quickly amended to remove all of those programs. So really what's being put forward right now is a hunting season, and that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. Jake, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And so, our going back to the first caller we had at the start of the show, one of the first callers who was a hunter but also a member of the International Crane Foundation, and wondering, in the past you'd been neutral, and now you're in opposition. Maybe why, or in the last minute, is that going to be continuing to be your stand?
Yeah, no, this is our stance, and unfortunately this has been a long issue for the International Crane Foundation and for sandhill cranes in this state. Again, this is the third or fourth time it's been brought up, and as a science-based organization that employs some of the best researchers in the world, we really try to stay above the fray on issues like this, but when proponents of a hunting season are putting out a lot of wrong messages and wrong information and bad data in regards to this issue, I think it's important that we get involved and make that known. You know, this is our time to stand up for the birds.
Ryan, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I appreciate it, and I'm sure you and I will be talking down the road. Thank you
so
much.
I'm sure we will.
Ryan Michalesko is the Communication and Advocacy Specialist at the International Crane Foundation. And by way of full disclosure, we should mention the ICF is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors as well. So we appreciate that as well. So interesting, and I think a good hour as we talked about the pros and cons. And we are going to switch our attention and talk to the author of a new book. It's called Anthropause, The Beauty of Degrowth. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.